Welcome to the America's Workforce Radio Podcast, the flagship production of the American Workers Radio and Podcast Network, where organized labor and its never-ending fight to protect the rights of the American worker come first. Now, presented by LIUNA, Laborers International Union of North America, here's your host, Ed Flash Ferens.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Monday, September 7th edition, our Labor Day edition of America's Workforce, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify, Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there. All right. I am so happy, proud, pleased, you name it, to bring to the table on this special Labor Day edition of the show, Mr. Richard Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO. This is a really, really busy guy, and I had the opportunity to track him down about a week ago, and we did almost a half hour with him talking about just about everything. Buy Union, the Build Power campaign, you might have heard about that, organizing after Janus, how COVID has brought attention to worker safety. What's going on at OSHA, the National Labor Relations Board? What have they done to workers? The new NAFTA, the post office debacle, infrastructure needs, and why we can't get it done. And probably most importantly, labor's agenda for the fall. Rich has gone on record saying the Democrats have to pay attention to working people if they want to win. And it's something Hillary Clinton did not do. She took a lot of states in the Midwest for granted. And he says Joe Biden can't do that, or any of the Democrats. If they want to win, they want to get a majority in Congress, they got to listen to working class issues, things we talk about on this show each and every day. What we're going to do later in the broadcast is hear from the people that make up America's workforce, a big majority of them anyway, like Larry Willis of the Transportation Trades Department, our independent labor voice, Tommy Buffenbarger, formerly from the Machinists, Frank Matthews, the CWA, Bill Samuel of the Labor Federation, UAW's Josh Nasser, Melissa Cropper from the Teachers Union, Tom Conway from the Steelworkers, Tim Berga of the Ohio AFL-CIO, Dan Duncan, Maritime Trades, Pete Almaney, Heat and Frost Insulators, Linda Smith, AFGE, and Mark Gruenberg, our labor writer. We've put them back to back, and the question that I want them to answer is, what do you think of Labor Day 2020? Real simple. We're in a pandemic year. Things are different. And we have a major election upon us. So that's pretty much the makeup of America's workforce. What about Labor Day? How did this day start? Well, the very first Labor Day was held on a Tuesday, September 5th, going back to 1882. We're talking 138 years ago. It happened in New York City. Day was celebrated with a picnic, a concert, and speeches. 10,000 workers, 10,000, marched in a parade from City Hall to Union Square. Well, soon after that first celebration, the holiday was moved to the first Monday in September, which is the day that we honor today. And then Congress passed legislation making Labor Day a national holiday. That didn't happen until 1894. So who started Labor Day? That's a pretty good question. Some records show that Peter J. McGuire, General Secretary of the Brotherhood of Carpenters and Joiners and co-founder of the American Federation of Labor, it wasn't the AFL-CIO back then, he was the first in suggesting a day to honor those, quote, who from rude nature have delved and carved all the grandeur we behold. How about that statement? Now, Peter McGuire's place in labor history has not gone unchallenged. Many believe it was another McGuire, Matthew McGuire, a machinist, not Peter McGuire, who founded Labor Day. Recent research seems to support the contention that Matt McGuire, later the secretary of Local 344 of the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, proposed the holiday in 1882. While serving as secretary of the Central Labor Union in New York. Now, what is clear is that the Central Labor Union adopted a Labor Day proposal and appointed a committee to plan a demonstration as well as a picnic. So that's the bottom line. We have two people named McGuire. There's Peter and there's Matthew. So take your pick. I guess it really doesn't matter right now. All we have to do is celebrate what labor is all about, and that's what we're doing today right here on America's Workforce. All right, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, Richard Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, right here on America's Workforce.
This is America's Workforce. More shows available at awfradio.com.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest-growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The Food and Drug Administration has recently reported that the heartburn medication Zantac is linked to cancer. Zantac has been linked to a variety of cancers, which include bladder, colorectal, kidney, liver, pancreatic, and stomach. So if you or a loved one took Zantac and developed any of these types of cancer, you need to call Kelly and Ferraro, 216-575-0777. Let me repeat that number, 216-575-0777 for a free case review. You may be entitled to compensation from the drug manufacturer.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget, we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify. We ask that you subscribe and give us a rating. Best rating would be 5 stars. And don't forget, our Twitter handle is AWF Union Podcast. All right, let's go to line number one. Been chasing this guy for a long time. He's really been busy. I've seen him on Fox News, and it's good that you don't preach to the choir anymore. We got to make sure we get some converts out there. Seen him on Bloomberg News, CNBC, and I was talking to Bill Samuel, who we feature here on the show each and every month. I said, we got to get Rich Trumka back on the show. So, hey, here it is, Labor Day, and we got the guy, Rich Trumka. Welcome back to America's Workforce.
Thanks, Flash. Thanks for having me back, and happy Labor Day.
Happy Labor Day to you. You've been busy, busy, busy. I am so happy that you carved out some time, a very special day for all workers, union and non-union. We always say if it wasn't for the union, you wouldn't have an 8-hour day. You wouldn't have weekends. You wouldn't have paid vacations. You wouldn't have sick leave. We can go on and on and on. It's the union difference. I have to start out asking you, how are you doing? I know you're busy. We're in the middle of a pandemic. The message from Richard Trumka, unions, I know, are very, very in favor, in vogue today. What are you feeling out there, Rich?
I've never been more confident or optimistic, Flash. I really haven't. You're seeing more collective action going on out there. Our approval ratings, the union approval ratings, are the highest they've been in over 50 years. More people want to join the union than ever before. Over 60 million people say they'd join a union today if they were given the chance. So I'm optimistic. You have young people that are getting involved. You have seniors that are getting involved. And you have people in between that are getting involved. Men, women, people of color, and everybody else saying, we want and we need a voice on the job. Give us a union. So I tell you, I haven't been this excited and optimistic in a lot of years.
So, Rich, talk to me about the pandemic here. Has COVID-19 been a game changer in what you just said here on the air? Is that what's happening right now?
Well, I think the pandemic's shown a couple of things. First of all, it's demonstrated what we always knew, that there's systemic racism in the system, because people of color are getting hit harder by the pandemic than anybody else. It also shows that workers are considered expendable. They call us heroes. They call us essential workers. And yet they order us back to work. Like Trump ordered people back to work in a meatpacking plant and didn't give them any PPE, any personal protective equipment, and so thousands of them got infected. We have an OSHA right now, Flash, that is sort of non-existent. It's AWOL. And Trump has systematically defunded OSHA to where it's its weakest point it's ever been in its history. Fewer inspectors right now than we've ever had in our history. And so it's paid a price on us. And yet every day, workers get up and go do the work that keeps the country going, keeps the country safe, takes care of the people that get sick, educating our kids, doing everything that we always do in the best way that we know how to do it, despite the obstacles that have been put in the place of working people.
Yeah, I've noticed a number of states have picked up the ball and run on OSHA. Virginia, for one, which is a right-to-work state. We've talked about that on the show. We had a guy from Michigan, Sean Egan, just on a couple of weeks ago. Governor Gretchen Whitmer over there put a labor guy, he was from the trades, to enforce worker safety over in the state of Michigan. Is that what needs to be done now because of the weakening of OSHA nationally? What's your thoughts on that?
Absolutely. It means that our unions are all the more important now because we protect people's health and safety on the job, and we need those state OSHAs out there that can actually step up to the job. And who better than somebody who actually carried the tools and knows what goes on those jobs? Right now, Flash, OSHA has enough inspectors to inspect every workplace once every 165 years. And you can see that it is a cadaver. It's not doing what it's needed to do. We asked them to issue an emergency pandemic standard to protect workers, essential workers that have to be on the job. A standard was in place under Obama, and this administration abandoned it. They refused to do anything to give us the standard. They say that voluntary recommendations are adequate to take care of it. And yet those voluntary recommendations that they come by with are put aside, and workers get sick and workers die because this OSHA won't do anything to protect us.
Well, Rich, you took them to court on that, and I guess one of the courts ruled against you. Is there any other recourse right now as far as protecting workers?
We appealed it, and we're going forward, and we're still going to continue to do it. The HEROES Act is the best course, so it'll be the quickest course of action for us. The HEROES Act, it was passed over 104 days ago by the House of Representatives under Nancy Pelosi. One of the main items of it is that it would force OSHA to issue a temporary emergency standard immediately to protect workers on the job. And so that's why it's so important to get done, not just because of the financial elements of it, which are very, very important as well, but because of the health and safety elements that are contained in the HEROES Act. And yet Mitch McConnell, instead of passing anything, sent his guys home for a three-week vacation while workers are suffering, workers are getting sick, and workers are dying.
And what's happened here, Rich? I mean, you know how Congress works. There used to be a time, and I guess it's part of the political divide today, when, say, somebody comes up with a piece of legislation, and let's reference the HEROES Act. All right, you got the House coming up, you got the Senate in charge of Republicans. They have something different. You would think that the two sides would come together for the common good of the American people. And I understand the Democrats have negotiated it down a little bit, but nothing on the other side. Why can't they come somewhere in the middle? What's your answer to that, Rich?
Well, in fact, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer offered to meet them in the middle. You remember Republicans' bill is a little under $1 trillion. The Democratic bill is at $3 trillion, which is the right scale for this pandemic and what's happening to the economy. She said, let's meet in the middle of two, and they just walked away. Meadows, look, this comes from the top down. The president doesn't want to make compromise. The president's only going to do things that he thinks are good for him, not good for the country, not good for workers, not good for others, but good for him. And if he doesn't see an immediate advantage for himself, he's not going to do that. And then you have the other side absolutely fighting. You have a fight going on inside the administration. You have Mnuchin and Meadows fighting over whether to make a deal or not. Mnuchin saying we ought to figure something out, and Meadows saying, no, we're not going to. We don't have to. And then you got people fighting in the Senate. Mitch McConnell can't get his side together to do anything. they're in a total set of disarray and chaos. And as a result of that, America, the economy is suffering. America's workers are suffering. Our schools are suffering. Our kids are suffering. Our health and safety is suffering. And everybody else down the line, because they can't get their act together to actually negotiate a fair, good compromise that would help the country.
Yeah, well, there's one thing that McConnell has done, and that's stack the courts with conservative judges. Now, that's going to last probably, don't you think, like 20, 30 years into the future? What do you think?
At least. And the judges that he's appointing have been deemed unqualified by the Bar Association. That's not a Democratic Bar Association or a Republican or an Independent. That's all of them saying these guys are unqualified to be judges. And he doesn't care about their qualification to be judges. He only cares about their qualification about philosophy and what they stand for.
Yeah.
Justice
yeah, it shouldn't
necessarily included in that.
It shouldn't be a liberal judge or a conservative judge. We want a fair judge. We want somebody to balance both sides and follow the law, right?
Exactly. You want somebody who'll say, here's the facts, here's the law, I'm going to apply them partially and blindly, so that it doesn't matter what party you come from, you're going to get equal justice in my courtroom. Whether you're a Democrat, a Republican, a conservative, a liberal, a progressive, anything, when you come into my courtroom, I only see a plaintiff, or I only see people, and I see the case. And I'm going to give you fair justice. And when people don't feel that's happening, and more people don't feel that's happening, it corrodes the system and actually threatens the system that has kept this democracy going for a lot of years.
Well, he stacked the courts and certainly changed the National Labor Relations Board. If you don't mind, I want to switch to that because I've seen some rulings here that are scary and outright dangerous to workers. Outright dangerous. And from what I understand, now, isn't this supposed to be a 5-member board and there's only 3 on there? They're all conservatives, and in fact, 2 of them came from union-busting law firms. Rich, what's going on here?
Well, you know, look, before the last election, Donald Trump said that American workers' wages were too high. And he has done everything in his administration to make sure that wages don't get higher but get lower. And so he appointed union busters to the NLRB. And when the terms of the Democrats run out, McConnell won't bring them up for a vote so that 2 Democrats can get back on the board and balance the board. In addition to that, this NLRB has gone through 5 rulemaking procedures to weaken the act, even make it less strong than it is now. And it's one of the weakest labor laws in the world. Not the United States, the world.
Oh,
and
boy.
They've gone through 5 rulemaking procedures to weaken it even further. No other administration has gone through more than one rulemaking procedure in a term. Whether it was to strengthen it or weaken it, 1. This guy's gone through 5. He's cut back on our overtime. He's taken overtime away from a couple of million people. They've cut back on the protection about how you can have an election. They were even going to shut down the election during the pandemic and say we couldn't have an election during the pandemic, which is precisely what they want all along. And remember this, Flash. The law of the land says that the government will encourage the process of collective bargaining. We haven't seen an administration recently that's really encouraged the process of collective bargaining. But we're going to get there because Joe Biden has said he's going to pass the PRO Act. The PRO Act will change the laws. Remember, the laws that we're governed by were written in 1940s. And then there was another amendment in the 50s to weaken the law even more. Now, we're living under laws that were made 80 years ago. You got to admit that the world's changed a significant amount in the last 80 years. But our laws protecting workers sure haven't. They need to be changed. The PRO Act will do that. It will strengthen workers' rights, and it will try to rebalance the imbalance of power between corporations and workers, because now corporations are too strong and workers are too weak, and the PRO Act would help rebalance that so that we can get a fair share of the wealth that we produce and that we can get a fair share of the increased productivity that comes about by technology and everything else so that the middle class can begin to grow again rather than continue to wither as it has for the last four decades.
Yeah. All right, Rich, I got to take a quick break. You can stay with us for another segment on this special Labor Day broadcast. Can you do that?
Absolutely.
I like it. I like it. Rich Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, AFLCIO.org. We'll continue the conversation right after this.
This is America's Workforce.
You're listening to America's Workforce, and this upcoming segment is brought to you by the Ohio Federation of Teachers. Check them out online at oft-aft.org.
There is unity and strength for workers.
We are the USW.
We are the USW.
The United Steelworkers.
The largest industrial union in North America.
We represent 850,000 members in the U.S., Canada, and the Caribbean.
We work in metals,
rubber,
chemicals,
paper,
oil refining, atomic energy, and the service sector.
We are steelworkers, standing strong and fighting for what's right.
This segment of the show is brought to you in part by our proud sponsors at the United Auto Workers. We appreciate your continued support.
The Heat and Frost Insulators and Allied Workers are proud to be a title sponsor for America's Workforce Radio. The Insulators Union is leading the way in the mechanical insulation industry, fire stopping, and infectious disease control. Regarded as North America's energy conservation specialists, these professionals are known for their professional work and dedication. You can learn more about the Insulators Union at insulators.org.
Now, back to Ed Flash Ferens with America's Workforce.
And welcome back to America's Workforce. Don't forget we're available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, Spotify, Twitter handle, AWF Union Podcast. You can follow us there. And don't forget the word union, all right? Well, let's go back to our live line. Rejoin Rich Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, on the special edition of America's Workforce, talking to the head guy about a lot of things. Hey, you know what I saw? I want to talk about the post office. But I get the emails every day from the Labor Federation, this Buy Union, Build Power campaign. I was quite fascinated by that. In fact, I know you did it for a couple of weeks in August, and it was continued on for the first week of September. Can you give me the strategy behind that? It sounds like this was an educational experience, an economic experience. Talk to me about that part, Rich.
Well, first of all, look. Let me start off with just basic economics, the theory. They've been telling us for years that the economy's like the weather, right? There's nothing you can do about it. But the economy's not like the weather. The economy's nothing but a set of rules. Those rules are made by the men and women that we elect, and those rules decide the winners and the losers. And for four decades, those rules have been made for us to lose. And so what we're saying is we're going to change the rules here a little bit. One, we're going to elect people that are going to help us write rules that workers win, you know, pass the PRO Act, have a fair trade system, have taxes that encourage people to produce here, a tax system and does all of that. And then we're starting to elect our own. We're running thousands and thousands of union members to run for public office so that they can help us change the rules. Now, one of the things that government does is buys a lot of stuff, like the federal government buys $700 billion worth of stuff a year. Why should they use our tax dollars to buy stuff from overseas to help workers everywhere else but here? Why shouldn't they be buying stuff here? And so what we're saying is, look, we want you to buy the stuff here. If you can't get it here, then it tells you that we're being hollowed out and we need to have a different system for our manufacturing sector of the country so that we can grow the manufacturing sector and produce those things here at home for national security and for everyday use. And so that's what we're doing. We're educating our people about if you spend your dollars to help put workers, good-paying jobs to work, you're going to increase wages for everybody. If the government, federal, state, and local government, buys things made here, it will increase the amount of manufacturing here, jobs will get increased, wages will get increased, and benefits can be increased.
Is it the lowest bidder rule that's complicating things here if you want to move forward on something? I mean, your idea makes sense, But you know, there's things you got to jump over. So what's the problem here?
Yeah, well, sometimes they just don't think about it. Democrats or Republicans alike, sometimes they don't think about it. So what we're trying to do is make them think about it and make them consciously decide how you're going to spend American tax dollars to help Americans or to help somebody else. Now, look, when it comes to national security, there is no thing about lowest bidder. And by the way, if you were ordering a heart device, would you want the lowest bidder to provide that heart device? The person who gave you the lowest price?
I don't think so. Nope.
Or
nope,
you
nope.
want the most skilled and the best person to provide you with that device? It's the same thing here. The lowest price isn't always the lowest price.
Right,
in our construction industry, they bid non-union jobs, and then after it's done, they have to bring union workers in, the most highly skilled construction workers in the world. They have to bring us back in to fix the job that wasn't done. And the price gets to be twice as much. So the lowest bid wasn't the lowest bid.
Exactly. And, you know, I didn't realize this until the pandemic that like 80 to 90% of our pharmaceuticals come from China. I'm like, come on, we can't manufacture our own drugs here? What's the problem, you know?
And 52% of the things that are necessary for national security come from elsewhere, not here. We only make 48% of the things that are necessary for our national security. Go figure that one out.
I'm just thinking here, you know, if we can bring that money back home, you mentioned $700 billion that the government spends, and then we do
the federal government.
That's just the federal government. Yeah, we got state and local governments.
Yeah.
Add to that the infrastructure needs. I know the House passed the Invest Act, which would put, I think, $1.5 trillion into our infrastructure. Rich, do you realize how many good jobs we could create if we followed that formula?
Millions. And we could create a virtuous cycle upward instead of a cycle downward, so that wages would rise, standard of living would rise, everything would get better for us rather than getting worse. By driving people's wages down into the ground. Because remember, our economy is 72% driven by consumer spending. If workers don't have money in their pocket to spend, then you can't create demand and you can't create jobs. The economy doesn't grow. And what we're trying to say is good union jobs create better wages, better benefits, better health care, but they help everybody else in the industry as well. Because when we get a raise, everybody else in the industry gets a raise as well.
You got it. All right. I want to switch over to the post office. What's happened to the post office is a tragedy. I am just concerned about November. And Rich, you're probably in the same boat here. What's your thoughts moving forward? I know the Heroes Act would provide some money to prop them up. But then you got the President of the United States coming down on mail-in voting. Absentee is okay. But mail-in voting, no, you can't do that. It's going to be a rigged election.
It's the same system. It's the same system. I guess he doesn't know that. But, you know, but look, the attack on the post office didn't just happen. The attack on the post office came under George Bush because he tried to privatize the post office and found out that it was so popular and so loved in rural communities, urban communities, and suburban communities that he can't privatize it. So he did something to try to weaken the post office. And here's what he did, Flash. He said to the post office, you have to pre-fund your retiree health care. Nobody else in the world has to do that. No agency has to do that. No corporation has to do that. Only the Postal Service. And that cost them the tune of about $5 billion a year. And that's the difference between the Postal Service being in the black and being in the red. So they couldn't get away with it. They try to defund it. They try to do everything they can. And, you know, look, funding and protecting the Postal Service is just common sense. It's not controversial. And that's why the labor movement so strongly supports the Delivering for America Act to protect the Postal Service from destructive changes. Look, when the president attacks the Postal Service, think about this, Flash. He also attacks more than 100,000 veterans who work for the Postal Service. And when he attacks the veterans and the seniors who depend on the Postal Service for delivery of medicine that they need to live quality lives. He attacks the rural communities where the post office is the tie that really binds people together and connects them to the rest of the country. And here's the real, he attacks the very idea of America as one country, because we're bound together by postal workers devoted to serving our country as they have since George Washington's day. And so here again, he's thinking about himself. He knows that if more people can vote, they're not going to vote for him. So he's figuring out ways to try to keep the vote at a minimum. And that means voting early and voting by mail isn't good for him because it will cause more people to vote. Mm-hmm. Think about this. In Milwaukee, in the primary, they normally have 178 voting sites. During the pandemic, this last primary, they had 5 voting sites open in the whole city because of the pandemic. You shouldn't have to choose between your health and safety and voting, because they're both your rights.
How do you feel about November? I mean, there's a lot of obstacles. You touched on them here on the show. You did make a comment recently that Joe Biden and the Democrats in general, they have to pay attention to working people. And apparently, Hillary Clinton didn't really do that 4 years ago. How do you feel about Joe Biden and the Democrats now? What's your thoughts, Rich?
You know, listen. The platform that the Democrats adopted is the most progressive platform I've seen in my lifetime. It rivals the platform of Franklin Delano Roosevelt. And that was spawned and sponsored by Democratic candidates, by Joe Biden, by Harris, by Bernie Sanders, and by a bunch of others, Elizabeth Warren. So they're paying attention. Look, Joe Biden's Build Back Better plan recognizes that what we're going through right now isn't just a cyclical downturn, that the structural flaws of inequality and unequal bargaining power between management and workers and systemic racism and decades of underinvestment in our infrastructure, the poor conditions of our schools and the lack of support for teachers, our flawed and costly healthcare system have all been exposed as weaknesses that are holding America back, and they need to be fixed. And I think Joe Biden understands in a way that Donald Trump never has and still doesn't, that the best and only way to fix our economy is to start by beating the pandemic. And the only way to beat the pandemic is to keep workers safe so that they can continue to produce. Joe understands that. Donald Trump either doesn't understand it or doesn't care, because it doesn't fit into his equation for how he wins. It's sad. So I feel more confident right now. Joe knows us, and we know him. He's been to our union halls. He's been to our picket lines. He's been a friend of working people forever. And he knows how to create middle-class jobs, and he knows the importance of unions and the importance of having bargaining power at the table for workers.
Not afraid to say the word union. Amen, brother. All right, I'm going to button it up here. We are going to do, after this commercial break, we're going to do a salute to the people that make up America's workforce. We have representatives from the UAW, the Steelworkers, the Ohio Federation of Teachers, Larry Willis of the Transportation Trades Department of the AFL-CIO. I would just like to end the show with Rich Trumka's view of Labor Day 2020. Rich, go ahead.
Look, Labor Day 2020 is a chance for us to change the direction of this country. I know a lot of workers out there don't believe that the political system or the economic system works for them, but now's a chance for us to change that. Joe Biden will help us change those rules so that the system works for us. I believe if everybody gets out to vote, we can change the direction of this country. And we can attack the inequalities that exist in this economy, and that's the inequality of wealth, the inequality of opportunity, and the inequality of power. We can attack those and create an economy that really does work for every one of us, so that everybody, regardless of whether you're a Democrat or Republican, you can get quality health care, a great pension, fair wages. Your kids can get a decent education. We can educate and skill our workforce like no other place around the world. Give us a fair chance, and the American worker in 2020 can take on and beat anybody. And Labor 2020 is our chance this year. So get out and vote on November 3rd and let everybody know your vote counts and your voice matters.
I knew I'd get a good answer from you. All right, Rich. All right, don't be a stranger. Let's communicate more often, okay, my friend?
You bet. I'll come back anytime you ask me to, buddy. Hey, and let me just say this to you, all right? Thanks for what you do every day, because you do a tremendous service for working people. You help workers every single day, and you're making a difference. And on behalf of every one of us, I just want to say thanks. Thanks for what you do every day to help us.
Well, I appreciate the kind words, and I love every darn minute of it. All right, Rich, take care, and we'll be talking to you down the road, okay?
Okay, buddy, take care, and happy Labor Day.
That's right, happy Labor Day. Rich Trumka, president of the AFL-CIO, the national AFL-CIO, on the special Labor Day broadcast. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, it's a labor roundup. The people that you hear Monday through Friday on America's Workforce, we're going to hear what they have to say about Labor Day 2020, right here on America's Workforce. Back in a few minutes. Don't go away.
You're listening to America's Workforce with Ed Flash Ferens.
LIUNA, the Laborers International Union of North America, is the most progressive, aggressive, and fastest growing union of construction workers, and one of the most diverse and effective unions representing public service employees. LIUNA members are on the forefront of the construction industry, a sector that is a powerhouse of 12 million workers producing 5% of our country's economic output. A half million strong. We're united through collective bargaining agreements which help us earn family-supporting pay, good benefits, and the opportunity for advancement and better lives. With Mobile Action LIUNA, you can get updates on your cell phone, find out how to sign petitions, and download union ringtones. Be a part of your union's political and organizing efforts by sending a text message on your cell phone with the word LIUNA to the number 69866. Through the LIUNA Action Network, you can stay informed about your union with a one-minute update and action alerts.
The United Steelworkers of America represent over 70,000 workers in the state of Ohio. Steelworker members enjoy the benefits of some of the best contracts of any workers in the world. Many of your friends, neighbors, and relatives are members of one of the most effective democratic unions in our country. With the pressures unorganized workers are under in today's economy, you need to join them. So call the Steelworkers Organizing Office at 216-292-5683 or toll free at 1-800-443-3752.
Now, back to America's Workforce. Here's Ed Flash Ferens.
Hey, we're back. It's America's Workforce Special Labor Day Edition, where we are available on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, iHeartRadio, as well as Spotify. By the way, this next segment brought to you in part by the fine folks at the United Labor Agency. They're trying to do everything possible to connect people with employment. 216-666-2185. You can find them online at ulagency.org. Once again, I'd like to thank Rich Trumka for joining us here on America's Workforce. What we're going to do right now is hear from the people that make up this show. And we have about 14 different individuals that I've been reaching out to here in the last couple of weeks, asking them one question. What does Labor Day 2020 mean to you? And keep in mind, this is a whole different year than years past. We have a whole different set of elected officials in Washington that have not been friendly to worker. Let's hear from them right here on America's Workforce.
Hi, this is Tim Berga, president of the Ohio AFL-CIO. This Labor Day, we honor workers, who are delivering us through the pandemic, food service workers, grocery workers, first responders, nurses, those working in transportation and corrections, our postal workers, energy transmission and manufacturing. The union workers in this state have largely been essential, and they've delivered for us, and we need to have policy changes that deliver for them. This Labor Day, let's thank a worker. Let's understand the value of our workforce, and let's have politicians that understand that it's these workers that are delivering to get us through the pandemic, and we need policies that deliver for them.
Hi, this is Josh Nasser from United Auto Workers, wishing you a happy Labor Day. It serves as such a reminder of two things. how far we have got to go as we're seeing people working harder and harder forever just have their retirement security and wages taken away. We have a lot of work to do, but also how much we have to lose, because the fact we have benefits and the fact we have a voice at work can be taken away quite easily. So both things will be on the ballot this November, and we've got to remember to stick together and to have one each other's back. So happy Labor Day from Josh Nasser, UAW. Thanks.
Hi, this is Frank Matthews, Administrative Director of the Communications Workers of America District 4. And Labor Day means to myself and CWA that we really should honor those union brothers and sisters that fought before us for workers' rights, like better hours, better working conditions, and a real voice on the job. Sadly, those rights are under attack more than ever today. Sometimes we also forget that not everyone gets Labor Day off. Most government employees, and if you're lucky enough to belong to a union, you do. To me, we can honor the true meaning of Labor Day by not working on this day, shut off everything that connects us to the grind, your phone, computer, whatever. Reflect on those that have fought before us and will fight after us for those worker rights I mentioned before, the better hours, the better working conditions, the voice on the job, and really just spend the day with family in celebration of what we have and enjoy your well-earned day off. Thanks a lot and have an excellent Labor Day.
This is Mark Gruenberg of Washington Window. Just for this Labor Day, we thought we'd take a look at the state of American labor. It's not good. First of all, there are 50 million or so unemployed. The official statistics say 30 million, but that doesn't count those who were unemployed before the Depression hit, and it doesn't count those who had dropped off the labor force. Second, 180,000 people have died unnecessarily, and God knows how many millions are sick because we don't know how many people are asymptomatic. And third, that hasn't stopped the administration from doing everything it can to rip up workers' rights. You name it, the NLRB is trying to do it to people. So put all that together, and what you have is a state of America's workers this Labor Day that is not very good, and that's something that workers should keep in mind as they go to the ballot box this fall. Your vote counts. Make sure your vote counts, and make sure you cast your vote for somebody who will help you as a worker rather than hurt you as a worker.
Hi, my name is Linda Ward-Smith, and I am the president of AFTE Local 1224 here in Las Vegas. And Labor Day 2020 means so much to me, more so now than ever before, mainly because I believe we are in the fight of our lives as federal workers. We've been trying to negotiate a contract, and it's been hard to get management to the table. So I don't want the fight that our forefathers have fought, laborers have fought, in the past to go down on my dime is something that is history. So we have to fight. We have to fight for what's right. And I believe that's what we're going to do on this Labor Day weekend. Thank you and have a great Labor Day.
I'm Mike Dolan and I'm with the International Brotherhood of Teamsters. And I just want to say to you and to all your listeners a great happy Labor Day as much as you can this year. I guess what I want to say from the Teamsters perspective is this about Labor Day 2020. You know, in a general, in an ordinary year, we would be focused on really just celebrating our solidarity as we do every year, celebrating our community and our co-workers and our class. But this obviously isn't an ordinary year, is it? So we temper that celebration this year in 2020. We temper it with compassion, and we temper it with concern, especially for essential workers in the public sector, in the private sector, the frontline workers, the supply chain workers. Many of them are Teamsters. So even though we're, you know, socially distanced, even though we're apart this year, I think that it's probably more important than ever that we focus on that community and on the diversity in our community, and that we stay as close as we can, even though not physically, but in terms of our organizing and our solidarity, and we say to one another, happy Labor Day, and please stay safe.
Hi, I'm Tom Conway. I'm the president of Steelworkers Union. And look, this upcoming Labor Day, we're sort of, first, grateful for a number of things. This media, we don't have enough media that covers labor issues in the country. So having this radio station is important to us, and the steelworkers are proud to be part of it. But as we're going through this year, you know, so often we say there's no election that's more important. This one really is crucial to the future of the country. So labor has to step up, do its part, and show up and get out and work the polls and get our members educated. And where we have splits in labor, have those discussions in our shop boards, in our workplaces, and don't shy away from them and explain why this administration is so onerous and so hard for organized labor going forward. And the other thing I'd say is we're at a turning point in our country, and we see a lot of young people who understand the power of collective action, who understand unions and what they can do for them. And they've been struggling for 2-3 decades now trying to get themselves on their feet. And I think unions in America are at a turning point. So Labor Day is important. This one in particular is strange because of the way we have to celebrate it and not our traditional parade. But it doesn't mean we don't celebrate it and take care of each other. So everybody, happy Labor Day.
Hi, this is Pete Alamini. I'm with the Heat and Frost Insulators Union. We're looking at a Labor Day 2020. And one thing that comes to my mind recently with all of the items that are going on in today's world and social justice and the coronavirus and working families and all of these items that we hear on the news, I've become kind of reflective on our Labor Day. And I think about how we have progressed, not only in the last 100 years, but even in my lifetime. I see the growth of safety regulations that have tripled and quadrupled in my 40 years of experience in construction. OSHA was developed in 1970, and to see where it is today and see how it is enforced and to see how the OSHA regulations are implemented with real application is absolutely incredible. When I started as a young apprentice, safety was totally different on the job site than it is today. The regulations have been adopted by insurance companies, and little known fact, insurance companies really are the ones that enforce the safety regulations. But the bottom line is it's better for workers to be working on the job site because these regulations are implemented. In my lifetime, in 40 years, I've just seen this, and it's something I think about on as we're going to celebrate labor and the workforce in America. And that applies to not only to union occupations, but also non-union occupations. The labor movement has been driven and implemented by the union workforce that has benefited everybody. And something that goes hand in hand with the safety regulations that have improved has been the quality of training within the building trades that makes it safe for everybody. The training programs have increased the mechanical ability for our workers to be more efficient and more professional, but it's also given the ability of safety training to be implemented to all our workers. And to see more and more workers that are able to work longer in their career to support their families, to have our retirees be able to live longer, enjoy their pensions more than they have before, really makes me warm and proud. My father was in the union, and he brought us up to understand and realize and value the work that we were given. As I'm 56 years old now, and I'm reflective on what labor has done the last 40 years, it really warms my heart. This Labor Day weekend, that's what I'm going to be thinking about.
Hi, I'm Tom Buffenberger, retired international president for the Machinist and Aerospace Workers. Labor Day 2020 is kind of special this year. We face unprecedented challenges in America. We have a pandemic underway. We have an economic system on the verge of collapse. We have a presidential election year. And this Labor Day, 2020, should bring a greater sense of reflection and commitment to doing what's right for our country. I'm proud that in 1894, Machinist Union member Matthew McGuire proposed the concept of Labor Day to the New York Central Labor Council. They adopted it. The first parade was held in 1894, and that's 126 years ago. And in the 126 years, many of us have used this wonderful celebration of work and the people who do the work to have cookouts and parades and barbecues. This year, it's a little different. We're not going to be able to gather like we have in the past, at least safely, and to do those kind of things. So we will have time to think about Labor Day 2020. The reverence for work, the dignity that work brings, the respect we should have for those who perform the work. My dad, a 67-year member of the Machinist Union, taught me from day one, this is a sacred day, and honor it and keep it in that mindset that today we're going to think about workers and what they mean to us, and tomorrow, the day after Labor Day, we're going to act on our commitment, and we're going to bring about the honor of those who deserve it by getting involved in the elections, by supporting our communities through the pandemic, and we're going to give thanks for all those who work every day to make our country a better, safer place.
Hello, I am Melissa Cropper, president of the Ohio Federation of Teachers. This year, Labor Day, I think, has more meaning to me than it ever has before. I think back over history of all the labor people who went before us, thinking about like the Triangle Shirtwaist Factory and the 146 women who died for safety measures, the Lowell Mill Girls strikes, the Bread and Roses strike. I think of people like Mother Jones and Thelma Hopkins and Frances Perkins, our first labor secretary. And I think of our Chicago Teachers Union, who just last year went on strike not only for better working conditions, but for better community conditions for their students so that they would have better housing and safe places to live. And then I think about what we are living under with President Trump now, who has proven himself to be so anti-labor and so anti-public education. The fact that he recently tried to force teachers back into schools into what they knew were unsafe working conditions by threatening to withhold federal dollars if they did not return physically to the classroom. And it just makes me really dedicated to this Labor Day, making people understand that when we have a president who is anti-union, that means that person is also anti-worker, anti-woman, anti-black people, anti-public education, anti-workers' rights, anti-safe working conditions. And I think we have to commit ourselves this Labor Day to talking to everyone we know and making them understand that and really committing ourselves to this year, starting on Labor Day, getting everyone we can to request an absentee ballot and go to the ballot box and from the top of the ticket to the bottom of the ticket, vote for people who support workers' rights, who support unions, who support public education, and who support safe working conditions. So that's what I will be doing this Labor Day.
This is Dorsey Hager. I'm the Executive Secretary Treasurer of the Columbus and Central Ohio Building and Construction Trades Council, where I am privileged to represent 18,000 members who put on a hard hat every day in Columbus and Central Ohio and 18 different building trades unions, everyone from laborers to plumbers and pipe fitters to electricians to insulators like myself. What Labor Day means to me is not only a day off from work, but also a three-day weekend to be able to spend with friends and family, not only barbecuing, grilling, having a few adult beverages, maybe spending time at the park or at the pool, or maybe having a bonfire, but also reflecting back on everybody that came before us and the sacrifices that they made to not only push forward the American labor movement, but also to make this country and what organized labor is for everybody. That's what Labor Day means to me.
This is Dan Duncan of the AFL-CIO Maritime Trades Department wishing all of our listeners a happy Labor Day. What a wonderful time to be a union member, to be out there fighting for everything we've got, and let's stand up for our brothers and sisters who are fighting hard to retain their jobs or to go back to work. Happy Labor Day, everybody.
Hey, this is Bill Samuel, the Government Affairs Director of the AFL-CIO, and I think this Labor Day may be the most important in many, many years. We've got a lot on the line. Congress is going to come back after Labor Day. We've got an election in 2 months. We can turn this country around, and I think it really is up to us. It's up to working people. It's up to the labor movement. We've got so much at stake, addressing the economic fallout of the pandemic, the healthcare crisis. Unions can lead the way, and that's what Labor Day is about. I think we're going to be in every community speaking out, standing up, protesting, calling our politicians to account, and that's really what Labor Day is about, and we're really excited about it and hopeful that people are going to come back from their summer breaks and get back to work and put this country back on the right track.
Boy, I enjoy doing that. All the people that make up America's workforce. And once again, a big thank you to Rich Trumka, president of the Labor Federation. That's it for another edition of the show. Coming up tomorrow, the latest from the Communication Workers of America and the local building trades. Until then, all of you have a safe and wonderful Labor Day.
That concludes another episode of the America's Workforce Radio Podcast. Thanks for listening, and be sure to subscribe so you never miss a show. America's Workforce is a production of Labor Tools and BMA Media Group. Find out more information online at labortools.com.